This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
a South African judge has ordered the release of a state report on corruption in President Jacob Zuma's administration. The judge issued the order Wednesday after Zuma dropped a legal bid to stop the report from becoming public.
That was Tuso Kumalo reporting from Pretoria. Details coming up.
Also, Ethiopia has lost millions in investment dollars because of attacks by protesters on foreign companies in the Oromia region.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, police in South Africa's capital fired rubber bullets today to disperse protesters who gathered near President Jacob Zuma's office demanding that he resign. Journalist Tuso Kumalo reported for VOA. He says thousands of protesters from the left-wing Economic Freedom Fighters Party smashed cars and building windows as they marched toward the union buildings, South Africa's seat of government. The protest took place shortly before South Africa's anti-corruption watchdog released a report on alleged corruption in the Zuma administration. A judge ordered the release of the report today after Zuma dropped a legal bid to keep it out of the public eye. The report examines accusations that Zuma allowed the wealthy Gupta family to choose cabinet members to serve their business interests. The author, former public protector Thuli Madonsela, calls for Zuma to appoint a commission of inquiry within 30 days to further study allegations of improper relationships and influence. The report was originally due to be released last month before Zuma blocked it. Zuma has faced corruption allegations before and was fiercely criticized for using about $20 million in public funds for upgrades to his private rural home. He later apologized and agreed to repay a fraction of the money.
In Ethiopia, millions of dollars in investment went up in smoke as protesters attacked foreign companies in the Oromia region. The violence prompted the declaration of a state of emergency last month. Reporting for VOA in the RC zone of Oromia near the town of Doni, Martha van der Wolf has the story of one foreign company that managed to stave off an attack with the help of community elders.
Since he came to Ethiopia 13 years ago, the owner of Maranke plants, Mark Driessen, had never feared for the future of his company, located about 80 miles south of Addis Ababa. But that changed on October 4th. Driessen saw several neighboring companies in flames. The noise of the mob was growing louder, and he knew his company, where he grows cuttings for export, was next.
We saw the protesters here in front of the gate with sticks and knives, and it was really frightening to see them coming this way.
Anti-government demonstrations started in the Oromia region a year ago, but it was only recently that protesters also turned against foreign-owned companies. More than 10 foreign companies have been attacked since September. Protesters say the government gives land to foreign investors without proper compensation for smallholder farmers who are forced to vacate their land. Maranke Plants employs 1,200 people, mostly women. Buzie Mekonnen is one of the many harvesters there. Throughout the day, friends and family called her to warn protesters could attack. Buzie and the other women were sent home, but Buzie was still scared as her husband also works at Maranke Plants. She says they were scared from the moment they heard another company was burned down. And what would they do, she asks, if the company was burned down, because then there would be no other job opportunity for them. Despite having one of Africa's fastest growing economies over the past decade, unemployment in Ethiopia is high, and over a quarter of the population is living below the poverty line. As nearby farms were being burned and looted, Driessen got lucky. Community elders arrived at his gate on motorbikes. They spoke to the angry crowd. Community elder Shumi Telila says he told the protesters they should not burn the place as their issue was about good administration and not with the company. Telila says since then, the elders have stayed in touch with Driessen and community members to discuss issues. Some in Ethiopia worry the unrest will stall the foreign direct investment that has fueled the nation's growth. Production at Maranke plants is now back to normal, but Driessen says he is still afraid the turmoil is not over.
We have talked with our clients about what we are going to do in the coming months, and what we did is that the unique varieties that are produced by us are also now going to be produced in Uganda, so that our clients can maintain their continuity in case of problems.
No foreign companies have been attacked since the government declared a six-month state of emergency October 9th. The government said this week that it released about 2,000 people detained over the violence. Ethiopia's government said it will do whatever it takes to restore confidence for foreign investors. But rights groups and opposition leaders warn that addressing protesters' grievances is the only way to stabilize the country in the long term. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The head of EU anti-smuggling operations in the Mediterranean Sea, known as Operation Sophia, spoke today in Rome about efforts to prevent the smuggling of migrants. Admiral Enrico Credendino said they've arrested nearly 100 traffickers and put more than 300 others out of business by seizing their vessels. Reporter Josephine McKenna attended the press conference and provides us with details.
Well, Admiral Enrico Credendino is in charge of the European Union's anti-migrant smuggling operation in the Mediterranean. This is also known as Operation Sophia, or UNAV for Med. So I'll refer to it as Operation Sophia, and that's been going on now for some time. He says that this operation has made significant inroads in intercepting and stopping the traffickers in Libyan waters, where so many sub-Saharan migrants are travelling to try and reach Europe. But he says it's absolutely critical for these people to work with the Libyan government to do more to stop the smugglers. They've done a lot of damage, but they want to go into Libya and talk to the government about going further.
I understand that 99 traffickers have been handed over to Italian authorities. So have authorities said what they're going to do?
Well, as we know, many of these traffickers have been handed over several months. So we've talked about some of them being arrested by Italian authorities once they've landed in Italy. He's just given us the total today of 99 over several months. He did say that another 337 people smugglers had been neutralized. He used that word, neutralized. What does that mean? They seem to have seized boats and telephones and essentially put them out of business. But the big challenge is that these people smugglers don't leave Libyan waters, and this EU mission is not authorized to go into Libyan waters. So they can continue to operate, they can continue to send migrants on very dangerous vessels and push them offshore without anyone intervening.
So when you're speaking of the Libyan waters, this is the Libyan side of the Mediterranean?
That's correct. And arms trafficking is also a major issue here. Admiral Credendino said that arms are being moved into Libya through Benghazi and Misurata. That's also a concern. And some of the people smugglers and the traffickers are paying some sort of funds to rebel groups and potential terrorists. So that is also a concern. But the UNAV for Med operation has also begun training Libyan Coast Guard members. Admiral Credendino says this is essential to have their cooperation to stop the smugglers and try and stop this huge flow of migrants coming into Europe.
It seems this is a very dangerous operation with them boarding vessels that have the people smugglers on it. And the migrants are on these vessels as well.
That's right. And we've seen that on several occasions the migrants have actually turned over the people smugglers who've tried to hide among the migrants when they are rescued, when they do come on shore in Italy. That too has been, I imagine, very stressful for the migrants themselves who have travelled with people who have often been very violent, been very manipulative, and then sought to try and manipulate the situation and protect themselves once they are rescued.
When they are rescued, are they returned back to Libya or do they go on to Italy?
Well, once the boats are intercepted in international waters or Italian waters, the Italians and the Europeans have the right to really take them ashore. And once they land on Italian shore, they're, of course, susceptible to the Italian legal system, Italian justice. So that appears to be what's happening in this particular case.
Did the Admiral say that they're making quite a dent in human trafficking?
Admiral Credendino said that this operation has made significant inroads into the people traffickers, stopping their operations, but they need to go further. We've still seen 160,000 people rescued this year. He did say that 3,500 migrants had died in the Mediterranean in the last few months. So that is of concern. The operation, the EU, wants to go further at boarding and seizing these vessels that are suspected of people trafficking. They want to have more operations inside Libya, if that's at all possible. But he stressed that this is going to take time. It's about building relationships with a very weak government, a very unstable situation in Libya, and that is also presenting major challenges for these people who want to stop the traffickers.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
Meanwhile, French authorities hope to relocate about 1,500 migrant children from Calais today. The children are underage and traveling alone. About 30 buses are being used to take them to processing centers around the country after last week's closing of the migrant camp known as the Jungle. AP reports the child migrants will be taken to 60 centres where officials will decide whether they can seek asylum in Britain. About 300 migrant children have been sent to Britain from Calais and several hundred more are expected to go. However, the UK's decision to leave the European Union could create legal problems. About 5,000 adults were relocated from Calais last week. The Jungle Camp held about thousands of migrants, mostly from the Middle East and Africa.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Hayes Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Thousands of demonstrators demanded President Jacob Zuma to resign after a South African judge ordered the release of a state report on corruption in the Zuma administration. And Ethiopia has lost millions in investment dollars because of attacks by protesters on foreign companies in the Oromia region. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In Ghana, the Electoral Commission now requires journalists to pay a fee to be accredited to cover the presidential and parliamentary elections next month. Journalists are rejecting the requirement, which they say will reduce election transparency. Francisca Kakra-Forson has more from Accra.
The Electoral Commission has not said how much the accreditation fee will be, but according to the statement released Monday, the fee will cover the printing and lamination of accreditation badges. Journalists have until next Monday to apply and make payment. Kojo Youngson is a journalist at Joy FM Radio.
Let the media houses provide identification for their journalists and let the journalists go to work.
Youngson says small local outlets will be hit the hardest.
If they belong to a radio station that is not making a profit, that is not making enough money to pay for the correct number of their staff to participate in this exercise, then of course the loser is democracy. The loser is transparency. The loser are the people on whose behalf these journalists work. So yes, I definitely see that this will have a direct effect on the transparency of these elections. Hopefully not so much an effect that it will cause problems, but it will definitely put at a disadvantage large sections of the public.
It's an unusual practice in Ghana for journalists to pay money to report, especially on a national exercise. Although in September last year, journalists in the Ashanti and Western regions paid 8 cedis, or about $2, before being allowed inside voting centers during district assembly elections. Prince Minka reports for Class FM.
On various WhatsApp platforms that I'm on, most of them suspect a move to somehow clip the wings of the media. The Ghana Journalists Association, for me, must, as a matter of urgency, ask for a review of this particular decision.
The Electoral Commission says it needs to cut down on the number of journalists covering the polls. Funding is also an issue, said Deputy Head of Communications at the Commission, Yusif Ayuba.
You know, it is not in the interest of the Commission to, you know, charge fees to allow journalists to cover the election. Previously, what we've done was to source funding from our donor partners who normally, you know, take responsibility for paying for us to produce that particular accreditation card for journalists. But in this year's case, we've not had any donor, you know, paying for that fee.
The president of the Ghana Journalist Association told VOA they are in discussions with the Electoral Commission about the fee. The elections are just over a month away on December 7th. Francesca Kakwa-Forson for VOA News, Accra.
President Robert Mugabe signed a law this week creating special economic zones to lure back foreign investment. The move comes as Zimbabwe's economy continues to falter under a cash crisis. China may be the first in line to enter the zones. VOA's David Arnold asked a reporter, Kudze Sivanvashi, in Harare, about government attempts to attract outside investment.
When a foreign investor wanted to come into Zimbabwe, they would have to look for a partner who is Zimbabwean to own the 51%. And that would mean that partner has to have financial capability to buy into that business. So that was the challenge previously. Now, the Special Economic Zone Bill, a foreign investor can come in, register under the Special Economic Zone, and then fully own their businesses and run with subsidized taxes as well.
Where will these economic zones be located?
One specific part in Harare called Sunway, which is basically an industrial site. There's another place in Bulawayo, which is an industrial site. And there's been talk that there will be another one in Vifos, which will work towards boosting the tourism sector.
What does the government expect to be the effect of this on the national economy?
They're expecting that employment will pick up, foreign investors will start coming into the country and bringing in money and reviving. And the special economic zones, they've targeted certain industries that have been on a decline for a long while now. Some of these industries include the cotton, the textile, the beef sector, leather production, poultry, and they're also targeting the national railway.
Has there been any complaint from local people about the effect of this?
Some critics have been questioning the bill. Is it enough to lure back foreign investment into the country, given our government's long history of changing its stances every now and then? So some have been of the view that there is no investor that wants to come into a country and under that special economic zone bill and have it amended a few years down the line.
Do you have any idea what companies are interested in coming into Zimbabwe now with the special economic zones?
Yesterday when the president was signing in the bill, there was a delegation from China that had come for the meeting regarding the mega deal that was signed in 2015 when the Chinese president visited Zimbabwe. That Chinese delegation definitely has interest in Zimbabwe. Those basically take advantage of that deal.
That was reporter Kudze Sivanvashi in Harare. He spoke to VOA's David Arnold.
A new study concludes the number one risk factor for stunting in children under five is poor growth in the womb. The authors say more emphasis should be placed on pregnant women to eliminate stunting, a major cause of economic hardship in developing countries. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Experts say one-third of children under the age of five are born small and remain stunted, a major risk factor for childhood survival and an economic burden in developing countries. That translates into 44 million, or 36% of two-year-olds in 137 developing countries. Experts say the biggest problem is in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. It's also a problem in East Asia and the Pacific. Investigators at Harvard University's Chan School of Public Health conducted a study in which they found the number one cause of stunting was poor growth in the womb. Malnutrition, infectious disease, and poor sanitation were once thought to be the primary causes of stunting. The study was published in the journal PLOS Medicine. Researchers say the problem appears to be intergenerational, with mothers of stunted children are often themselves stunted. Gudars Danayi is an assistant professor of global health at the Chan School and lead author of the study.
We may need to improve nutrition and prevent infection, especially among women of reproductive age, for a few generations until we get this burden removed.
Stunting not only causes higher mortality among children, it also puts them behind academically in school by about a half year compared to their schoolmates, according to Danayi. The delay in academic achievement means they have poorer job prospects and do not do as well economically, putting a tremendous financial burden on their countries. One sustainable development goal set by the United Nations is to reduce childhood stunting by 40% by the year 2025. Danayi believes there has to be a paradigm shift in how public health officials address stunting by focusing on the health of women of childbearing age.
So we think that we now need to keep doing what we were doing before, but also shift some of the focus and attention to pre-pregnancy and pregnancy, as well as the environmental factors, specifically poor sanitation, to remove the rest of the stunting in the world.
The study was funded by the Canadian government. Danayi says he and his colleagues will now look at the economic costs of stunting globally, which he says are enormous. Danayi hopes the latest report helps the World Health Organization and World Bank prioritize the risk factors that should be targeted to eliminate stunting. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the electoral process and presidential elections in the United States. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.